Welcome to the Level Up Artist Podcast. We're your hosts, Adriana M.A. and
Jackie Sanders. We are two art professionals sharing forward the advice and business lessons we have learned along our creative journeys.
We talk to artists, leaders, and art professionals to demystify the creative process and discover new ways to succeed as a career-minded artist.
If you find value in these conversations, please go ahead and subscribe. This will help other creatives like you find our podcast, and you'll be notified we drop new episodes every Tuesday. On today's episode, we are so excited to have sculptural artist Eliza Redman on the podcast. So welcome, Eliza.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. We are looking forward to discussing the start of your journey as an artist, your multiple creative income streams, goals that you have as a career-minded person, as well as recording a bonus segment on leveraging your niche and pricing your artwork for our podcast supporters at levelupartist.com. But before we dive in, we'd like to share with our listeners a little bit more about your background, who may not be familiar with your work.
Yes. So Eliza Redman is a sculptor, architect, and founder of Folded Poetry Design Studio based in Durham, North Carolina. When a car accident upended her health, personal life, and career as an architect, she was forced to reinvent herself, and she found a way to utilize her creative potential for healing by creating art. The geometries she designed are inspired by persistent visual disturbances resulting from her traumatic brain injury. She creates framed pieces of paper, sculpture, free-mounted large-scale geometric sculptures, and most recently, she's been creating acoustical artworks which serve to reduce the volume in spaces while also adding beauty. While her work is indeed impactful as art itself, more importantly, it has been a primary driver behind the recreation of her health and reimagining of her life's purpose. And of course, this is a very formal intro for our listeners, Eliza, but how would you describe the work that you make to someone who has never seen it before?
It's really difficult to describe the aesthetic of what I make. So I normally just pull up my phone and show someone if this question comes up in person. However, I can't really do that here. So I usually ask people to describe to me what my art means to them. And the most frequent responses I get are usually like geometric, architectural, trippy, sculptural art.
I think that's a good description of it for sure. Long list of adjectives for sure.
Yes. those are the most common ones that come up.
And of course, we talked a little in your bio about kind of that pivot point from your training as an architect into becoming an artist in the more traditional sense. But when did you first feel like you could officially call yourself an artist?
I believe it was probably after I started getting commissions, because I started out just exploring form through paper artworks. So I was creating paper sculptures and I was moving light over it and just exploring this idea of form, light, line, shadow. And it wasn't until someone reached out and said, "Can I commission something from you?" that I thought, "Oh, I guess I can make money doing this." And so I believe it was probably, I mean, that's kind of a tough question for me to answer about exactly when it was, because due to my training in architecture, I didn't stray away from calling myself an architect immediately. I felt like that was maybe more credentialed or something than being an artist. And I didn't want to just call myself an artist and like lose that credential. But I've since transitioned over where it's like, yeah, what I do is sculptural art. And leading with that does serve my brand better than calling myself an architect. So I believe it was right around the time I started getting commissions, I started thinking, oh, I am an artist, but when did I call myself an artist? Primarily, it was probably, I mean, a little over a year and change into actually being an artist full time.
Nice. And to get a rough idea for our listeners, around what time did you start making these paper sculptures and, you know, that shift after architecture and like diving into this, about how long ago was that?
Right. So I was in my car accident in 2018. And then I went through about a year and a half of being really stuck in the mud, just like not really feeling like I was making a lot of forward progress after my brain injury. And I was really afraid because they say that, 6 months after the injury is when you reach your maximum healing potential, which is really discouraging. And so it was probably about a year and a half after my accident. And right around the time that COVID started, actually, when I just said, all right, I need to do something to get myself through this COVID pandemic. And also, I need to create forward momentum for my life. And I believe, yeah, so it was about a year and a half after I began, a year
Nice.
and a half after the car crash that I really began folded poetry and began playing with paper.
Nice. And then you mentioned obviously it affected your brain. Has this also influenced the type of work that you make and the type of creative direction you decided to go in?
It has, but it didn't immediately hit me what I was doing. So I was playing with shapes. I was creating these really mind-bending little video clips of the light interacting with my sculptural artwork, paper pieces. And it wasn't until I created quite a few of them and started creating these videos that I realized, oh, what I'm doing here is actually capturing what my experience with brain injury is like. What the visual disturbances are like, and what it feels like to be perceiving reality different than what you know it is. Obviously, these shadow videos that I created makes it look like there's a lot of movement when there's not, and that's exactly what I still continue to experience when I look at certain patterns, and depending on my fatigue level and my cognitive fatigue level. Brick walls can just look like they're vibrating, and I know they're not vibrating, but they look like they are. So aesthetically, my work was inspired by the brain injury, but like I mentioned, I wasn't entirely certain of what I was creating when I started out. And it's funny how the subconscious works like that. You can set off in a direction and it doesn't really make sense right away what you're after, what you're doing, what your motivation is. But then in retrospect, you say, oh, yeah, it's all coming together. That's why I did that. And just trusting yourself and your process, I think, is crucial to having those aha, really revolutionary moments in life. So that's how my work was inspired visually. I would say it has a functional aspect too. So I do experiment and I do prototype acoustic artworks, which are pieces that are both beautiful and they're also noise reducing. This direction is also inspired by my brain injury. Because after my car crash, I really struggled being in places which were loud, which in Durham, the city that I live in, there's this beautiful aesthetic that's prevalent downtown, which is brick and exposed wood, exposed brick and wood. And it looks really nice. It's really, really loud to be in these spaces. And I immediately sort of discovered after my brain injury that I can't really like stay here. I have like a, I think I began with like maybe a 10 to 15 minute threshold of time where it was like I can be in this space, and then I'm just completely overstimulated and overwhelmed. So
Wow.
both aesthetically and functionally, my work is inspired by my brain injury in a number of ways.
Nice. I
Yeah, and
also like how
that's
you mentioned that it started where you were just trying to work through the healing process. So it didn't come from a place of, I need to make money. What can I make that's cool? It was the opposite. It was more like, I need to work through stuff and I'd like to present what's happening to me, like in a way, like you were just working through it. And then it ended up looking cool, which is, of course, a win-win. But I like that idea that you're translating it in such a way that it's also open so that anybody that's watching it, they may not necessarily know where it stems from, but they maybe could see themselves reflected in it or see something in it that they like. And then who knows, maybe there's like more points of connection. But love that.
yeah, I initially thought this could be a side hustle. I did not ever imagine it could be my full-time gig. At the time that I began experimenting, I was on a disability policy through my former employer. And then there reached a point in my career where I was dropped from that disability policy and I no longer had income. And it was all of a sudden, do I try to get a job doing something else? Do I try to go back to architecture part-time and really force myself to work on a computer, even though I know it's not, what's best for me right now? Or do I just go full send in my art? And it was really like a leap of faith that I had to make in that moment. It was either I try to play it safe, or I just say, this is the direction of my dreams and I'm just going to go for it.
Yeah, I love that. And I think especially a lot of artists can relate to that feeling of you start with your creative process as something that maybe just keep your hands moving, maybe thinking of it as a hobby or a side project. But there is that pivot point, whether it's something very literal, like, okay, the disability policy ended and now you have to make that choice or not. Or maybe it's an income choice, maybe it's amount of time in your day where you really do have to acknowledge, okay, am I gonna start treating this like a full-on business to where I'm doing more than just creating these objects or creating these pieces of work as a way of personal fulfillment and healing to then the point of, okay, this can be my full-time gig, to your point. But that is a very pivotal mindset shift because very rarely do people start off making art just for a full-time income. But obviously, as a career-minded artist and now having pivoted to being full-time, do you mind sharing that breakdown of your income streams as an artist and how they have evolved since that moment where you decided to just, in your words, full send and go for it?
Sure. I began with just doing individual commissions, and I was in that zone for several years. I'm still in that zone of doing commissions. I've just gotten bigger and bigger commissions for my income. I also do speaking engagements and lectures and kind of make some income from that. I would say my workshops that I perform and my lectures and speaking engagements are really subsidiary income stream, but it's a nice boost now and then. And then, that's what I'm doing right now. It's basically mostly commissions, but my strategy has been over the past year has been to get big enough commissions to support myself while I do product development for licensing deals. And that be sort of like my primary focus, and I'm still in that boat right now. So I'm not sure if you've spoken about licensing deals before on the podcast, but I can just dive into it a little bit and give a little bit
Yeah,
of.
that'd be great.
Sure. So a licensing deal is when you create a single piece of art and you find a company who, if you do two-dimensional art, you find a company who does greeting cards, or they make skateboards, or they make I'm like tapestries or something like that. And then you pitch the idea of their licensing your art with them. They take the image and they put it on the product, and then they sell that product, and then you make a royalty on whatever they sell. So the royalty can be anywhere between like 1 to like 15%. 15% would be like pretty dang high. That's what licensing is. So essentially what licensing does is it gives you an opportunity. And what the way that I do it is I'm licensing right now. I'm working on licensing deals for acoustic products. So it's essentially taking my design ideas, and instead of thinking, okay, I'm going to use my highest work, which is my commissions, to make all of my income, which I firmly believe is a recipe for burnout. And instead, I'm going to take a design idea, and I'm instead of selling my labor and my art as on an individual basis, I'm going to take my design idea and sell my idea and make income from my idea. So that's really the distinction there. And those are the main income streams that I have right now. And licensing is something that I feel like I think all artists should look into it. It's definitely a way to maximize income from pieces. I mean, you can have a piece that if you sold it individually and you make $300 on it. Like, what if you licensed it and then you made 10 times that on it? You just never know. So looking into those deals is something that I'm prioritizing in this year, and I did last year, and I'm in the final contract negotiation phases for my first licensing deal for my first product line, which is going to be acoustic art through an acoustic manufacturing company.
Oh, that's
Ooh,
so
fingers and toes
exciting.
crossed. Yeah, it's really exciting. It's just a lot of tennis match back and forth with the contract, but I just really hope that we can get it all hammered out. And it was actually my goal for last year to get it completely, to get a land a licensing deal. And I'm bummed that it didn't happen like completely in last year. It's just the contract phase got so drawn out that now we're finally finishing it in January. But just glad it's happening, and I'm definitely prioritizing. I mean, I have it on my calendar for this week to start looking up more companies to do licensing with. A lot of times these licensing deals are exclusive. So for instance, I can't have another licensing deal with Acoustic Art while I'm working with this particular company, but I can look for other types of deals.
That makes total sense. And quick clarification point for our listeners, which I'm so glad that you brought up art licensing, and that's definitely something that we want to dive in to more on future podcast episodes, because we have talked a good bit about art products in general. So reproducible art, whether you're making like prints of your work or stickers or some of those more traditional, like there's certain websites you can upload your a picture of your artwork to it, get it printed on so many things. And I love that you are then able to take it to then the next step of creating an object that isn't an object that exists yet and licensing it that way. So it's almost that next level of reproducible.
And it's completely passive. I think that's the beauty of it, is that it's entirely passive. As soon as you have the idea and you're able to sign a contract to license it, you only need to provide that image or that concept or that idea, that prototype one time, and then you just have passive income on the sale.
Which everyone loves that. It's the best.
Everyone loves passive income. What's not to
Yeah.
like?
And especially from your point of view of you kind of touched on it earlier when thinking about going back to architecture, but and from getting to know you in person, those are, I think, factors especially that you've shared of like reducing your screen time and making sure that you're avoiding burnout and stress, because from a healing standpoint, that does mess with your healing process. And so I think it is very smart in that, almost out of necessity, of course, you have to really factor those things in. And those are things that sometimes as artists, we think like, I can just push through it. I'm going to push through the burnout and just hustle, hustle, like that hustle culture mindset. But really factoring in the burnout limit that we all have it, and not just using that as a form of this is a limitation I have that I have to work through, but thinking smarter when looking forward to opportunities, I think is really inspiring.
Thank you. Exactly. I think that's an important point to make, and something that I wanted to touch on in this call, which is the value of prioritizing your health and well-being in the process of creating. I find that when I'm finding myself, my grip is so tight that I can't relax. I can't give myself an opportunity to slow down and just take care of myself, that's a real problem, because the whole reason I'm doing this is to support a lifestyle where I can continue to heal. And it's a big challenge to recognize when I'm slipping into a mindset or habits that are not helpful to my recovery. So keeping my finger on that pulse is like a really big one for me. And in fact, this year I'm trying out a 4-day work week, just to make that a
Nice.
priority for me. So I'm only my second week into it, but it's going well so far. Having one day to do all of my grocery shopping and meal prep and workout, or at least, two of the three of those things, and then have a day where I'm just literally focusing on spending time with my partner is great. And then another day for, whatever I didn't do on the first day. Usually I'll grocery shop one day, Friday, and then meal prep on like Saturday or Sunday. But and then, what I found that it's doing is it's making me so much, it's giving me more time to relax. But then through that relaxation and feeling like, oh, I have a little bit of space, on the days when I am working, I'm like working. I'm like on. I'm like working through, like I'm like doing stuff during my lunch hour. I'm like, I'm valuing the time that I have off, and I'm valuing the time that no, I'm working now.
Yeah, well, it's a good reminder whether it's, tied to recovery or not, just to remember we need to have time to live. Some of us can definitely get into that work zone and forget you need time off. You need your body is not an infinite resource. Like, your energy's not infinite. You need to take that energy in your creativity, and you need to refill that tank anyway. So I love that you're prioritizing that. Skipping back to the business side for a second, went back into it. When do you figure out like that you need to shift focus from one income stream to the other? So obviously, like if you're in licensing mode, like that's probably going to take a lot of energy. But when do you go like, okay, this part needs to rest. I need to figure out another income stream to add to the mix.
I think I usually ask myself, what do I have any projects on the horizon? What is my projected income for the next 3 to 6 months? And then determine what my focus needs to be from there. Do I have a little space to focus on licensing? And then if not, then, you know, I'm reaching out to people who I try to keep a list of prospective projects, prospective clients. So I'm reaching out to those and saying, hey, you know, I have an opening X date or whatever. So I think it just depends on where I'm at financially. And I think also there's a balance there too, where sometimes I just really want to create, you know, I really want to create something, and it's like, I've been doing too much admin, you know, or I've been doing too much focus on the, you know, the Zoom calls and licensing and prototyping. And I really want to just create an installation. So I think it's both a balance between income and projecting my income, and then also projecting what, and just feeling out what my creative side needs.
Yeah, and I love that you mentioned the proactive reaching out to potential clients. I think that's an easy one that artists seem to forget. They're like, I just want to be discovered. So if I post often, I'll get discovered. And it's like, no, sometimes you need to send that email or pick up the phone or show up in person and build that relationship, or at least start it. You know, don't ask for something, but at least start that relationship and then go from there and add to that potential pipeline for income in the near future. So
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really important to do that. And I think I wish I had done this earlier, but you know, only recently just started a leads for job Google spreadsheet. That's just like, it's nice to just have handy. And it's nice to, you know, people say, yeah, I'm interested. And then sometimes we just don't follow up with them. And we just think they're going to come back and ask us again, when really it's like, no, it's our prerogative to get them on our email list and stay in touch with them and then follow up on their request. I don't think that like sitting back and waiting to be discovered is a good idea, especially if you want your business to be supportive of you, like a full-time gig. It's kind of like, you got to be out there. You got to be getting it. Like, you got to be like out there and like going at it. Or else it's like, what, you know, you can't put the likelihood of your success in the hands of someone else's potential reply or potential outreach, right? You have to just take it, what you want, or at least go for it.
Yes, I absolutely agree. And I absolutely love the newsletters that you send out, Eliza, on the podcast. We're huge advocates that every artist should have a newsletter. We love social media, but newsletters are where they're at. And I think to your point, especially then as you decide to pivot into whichever income stream you're wanting, there's a built-in audience there to tell about that pivot. You're not having to go find a completely new audience per se. But I do want to ask, like, what strategic advice would you give other artists when cultivating a collector base for your work?
Getting people on your email list is the number one, surprise, surprise. I think so many people are burning out of social media. I mean, at least personally for me, like, Instagram has just felt like a dumpster fire lately. I'm not sure. It's just felt like there's just so much like just noise in there and so many like suggested follows. Like, I'm not even seeing my friends' content anymore. And I just think it's unwise to put so much time and energy into networking on a platform where your reach is solely determined by an algorithm that can change at any minute, like literally any second. So one of the things, a piece of advice that I got early on in my career was to start an email list. And I took that advice really seriously. And everyone who said, I love your art, I saw it at la, 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 I said, hey, can I get you? Yeah, I'm glad you love it. Hey, can I get you on my email list? Can I have your email address? I'll add you. I think that's really, really crucial because you want a way to keep in touch with people, and Instagram and Facebook, they may come and go. We don't know what the next app might be or might not be, but email is forever.
It certainly is. As long as there's no algorithms tied to it, we should be okay.
We should be fine with email for a good long time. And I do these kind of lengthy intermittent emails, and I'm trying to focus this year on emailing a little bit more frequently and having a little bit less to say in them, because I literally sometimes go over the max amount that you can see in a single email window almost every time. I just get close to it, and I just don't think that's the best. You don't want people to have to click into a new browser window to finish reading your email. So I'm working with I actually hired a social media virtual assistant to help me with stuff, just to keep my focused hours on the things that are within my realm of things that I love and things that I'm good at. So I think it's important to really, I think it's important to really think about where we are in this chart of like, I like this thing, I don't like this thing, I'm good at this thing, and I'm not good at this thing. And the things that you're not good at and you don't like, just outsource those things. Like, don't put that on your plate. It's not going to help you. And what I'm trying to get better about and trying to, in the ways in which I'm, the framing of by which I'm trying to invest in my business now, is focusing on the thing that I like and I'm very good at. And then everything that falls in the three other categories are things that I'm actively trying to outsource and get help with, because ultimately I'm the only one who can bring value to my brand. And I can't do that when I'm doing crappy tasks that I don't enjoy doing. That's not inspiring, and it's not going to inspire my audience, and it's not going to bring value to my brand.
Yeah, we need you to shoot to shout this from the top of rooftops to artists everywhere. Seriously,
it's hard.
I can't even. I just can't even. I love so much of it, and yeah, we agree. We're very big into, look at the tasks that you're doing in your art business. What can you eliminate? What can you delegate? And what can you automate, essentially? Like don't waste your time. Things like the paintings or the sculptures and things we do, only we can do. But things like posts on social media, like, that's delegatable. Like, why would you waste your time and then get frustrated over it? Like, just, Or things like client outreach, that's a relationship building thing. You need to do that, right? But like other parts of it, like finding out, what the emails are, or the websites, or the contacts are, delegatable. Like, somebody else can like help you research all that stuff. So love. Question I have for you is, speaking of career stuff, because of course we love this, do you have any specific long-term goals as an artist that you'd like to share? At least one. If you have one big one that you're like, ooh, this seems a little bit out of reach, but I'm going for it anyways.
So I reviewed these questions, and I had a question, an answer prepared for this one, which is, and I'll give you sort of my sort of first take on this question, which is that I want to have enough licensing deals that I can be and have enough passive income where that's all the income that I need is just from passive income, so that I can just focus on just making art, literally just to make art, and then license it if I want to do that. One of my biggest long-term goals, actually, which I hope isn't such a long-term goal, is that I really want to be able to retire my partner and just have him be someone who can help me with accounting, because he's an accountant, but also just support him in doing things that he is great at. I think he's a really stand-up man, and I think he could be really great at like mentoring. And I know that he really aspires to like teach wrestling and be like a wrestling coach. And those are just things that like, I feel like he could really like allow him to give back in that way. And I guess along those lines, one of my largest, another large goal for Folded Poetry and sort of like biggest goal that I have right now, that's not like assigned to any like dollar value, is that I really want to make Folded Poetry more, instead of just being about me, I want to lean into the fact that I decided to name Folded Poetry what it is. And when I named it what it was, it was this decision that I want this to be bigger than just me. I don't want it to just be Eliza Redman artist. I want it to be Folded Poetry, which I ultimately hopefully see as being a collective for artists and makers, where if I can get work that's flowing in and people want the Folded Poetry aesthetic, which a lot of people resonate with it, a lot of people love it, then how do I work with a network of makers to pass along opportunities through this sort of Folded Poetry funnel and allow people to make income by doing creative work that's within their mediums, but still supports the Folded Poetry brand, but then also allows them to have opportunities. And it's sort of an all boats rise mentality that I think is just an idea that has really come to me. Actually, this year, surprise, surprise, after taking time off and being away from the studio and taking care of myself, I had these big ideas, which always happen. So it's like, yeah, it's always hard to take time off when I need it, but then when I do, there's always a benefit that's unforeseen. So yeah, those I would say are my biggest long-term goals for Folded Poetry.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And I think, I mean, of course, nailing it on the head of we all know it's one of those things that when you take rest, you take time to slow down, exercise your body, fuel it with nutrients, like do all the things that we know are good for us. That's when those aha moments happen. Having, it sounds counterintuitive, but time away from your work often brings those epiphanies in your creative process, which it's so cool to hear, especially with that big vision that you have, which I think is one thing for many artists. It can sometimes be scary to even let yourself think that big because that's kind of when the self-doubt comes in. That's when you think, oh, well, why am I not there yet? But I love your ability to cast that big vision and to see the longer term of these are the steps, you know, the direction you're going in. So even for seemingly little decisions now in the next 3 months, 6 months, it's going towards this vision that may happen 6 months from now, a year from now, whatever it is, that can really help with that navigation, which I love it. It's great.
Yeah, I think it's really, really important to cast a bigger goal than you think you can, that you think is possible.
Yeah.
Because honestly, like we can, and I've heard this, I've listened to a lot of like business, well, I wouldn't say a lot of, but I at least consistently listen to and absorb educational material from podcasts and books around like entrepreneurship and arts business. And one of the things that consistently comes up is set a bigger goal than what you think is possible for yourself, because we can actually limit ourselves when we set a goal that's only like a little bit out of our reach, because we're only reaching that far. But what if
Right.
we set a goal that's like a mile away, and then all of a sudden our engines are cooking to get us there that much more, as you said.
Yeah,
Yeah,
absolutely. And I
absolutely love it.
think definitely from personal experience, I think the times that I have felt like the most lost in my creative journey is when I've had those moments where I accidentally like run past a goal. Like if because the goal is so small, then once you hit it, you're like, well, now what do I do? And you almost feel like you have to start over. Like, well, I have to set a new goal again. But if you start with that big one, you're gonna be working on it for a little while, but that's the motivation that's really that a lot of artists need.
Totally, totally. I 100% agree with you. You said it so well.
Absolutely. All right. Well, next up, we love to ask all our guests how they define success. But first, we'd love to put in a quick word from our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by our Level Up Artist courses.
We understand that life as a modern artist can be both exciting and overwhelming. Plus, there's a lot of information out there. So, what do visual artists actually need?
We've spent countless hours of trial and error, weeding through tons of information to find the gold, so you don't have to waste your time going down those endless rabbit holes.
In addition to weekly calls, we have created video course modules to cover everything from artist documents to exhibition prep, social media to technology, sales strategies, artist mindset, PDF resources, templates, and so much more.
Ready to get started? Head on over to levelupartists.com to learn more, get immediate access, and level up your career today.
Welcome back, everybody. So real quick, one of the things we like to ask everybody on the podcast, all our guests, is how do you define success as an artist?
This is a really tough question because I still struggle with not defining success as like how much money I'm able to make doing what I do, just completely honestly, because I think because I do it full time, it's like either I'm doing enough to provide for all my needs or I'm not, is essentially what I tend to think about. But what I'm trying to shift my focus onto is this idea of how many moments of wonder or awe do I create of my own work? Like, how many of those moments do I have where I finish a piece and I really can stand there and just say, wow, that is so much cooler than I thought it was going to be. And I think that's a much more healthy way to define success, is like how much wonder and awe am I bringing into my own life by my own hands.
I absolutely love that, especially because I think oftentimes we can feel elements of success that are variables outside of our own control. And so I love that of kind of bringing it back to your practice is amazing. So what is one piece of advice that you wish you had heard before you got started on your creative journey?
This is asking for one piece of advice, but I have quite a few ideas around this question.
Let them roll.
The biggest one is the value of focus, time. So really thinking, I mean, we tend to think, okay, what's our most valuable resource? And time comes to mind, right? But I actually think it's what you're doing with that time. Like, are you focusing on achieving your goals with that time? Or are you sort of filling time with doing tasks that may or may not help you get to your end goal, and like procrastinating in various ways by doing menial things that you don't necessarily need to get done right away? Like, you're checking your emails instead of working on the portfolio or whatever. So I think the value of focus is a really big one that I wish I had known about early on. I think going along with that, how to time manage and doing time blocking and writing out schedules and priorities is another big one for me. So I keep a physical calendar. I have it literally right here in front of me. I keep it in front of me all the time. And one of my tasks that I switched to my Friday, which is now my day off, my extra day off, is literally writing down all, looking back at my month goals and literally writing down all of my goals for that week and just like scheduling it in on this day. What's my top priority on this day? I'm going to work on these things. And knowing also that my most focused time is right away in the morning. So scheduling my morning tasks for keeping that time open for my most important tasks and not sitting down and just immediately checking my emails, but sitting down and saying, emails are just going to have to wait. Right now, I'm doing this most focused task that needs all of my best time and energy. I think those are really important things that I kind of wish I had known earlier, but picked up on pretty quickly listening to like entrepreneurship podcasts. Okay, so another piece of advice that's like less for me and more for, I think, the listeners, because it's something that I hear a lot, is that people deal with perfectionism a lot. And I really feel like perfectionism is a dream killer, because once you're going to try to make something perfect, instead of trying to complete it, you're just going to spin your wheels. And my personal motto is, and this motto got me through graduate school in architecture, is completion beats perfection. Completion beats perfection every time. I have not ever had a single project that is perfect. And if I tried to make all my projects perfect, I would still be on my first project. I don't think it's even possible to have a perfect project. And I think that if you focus on making it perfect, it's just gonna drag you down. I also think that when you're stuck, that's an opportunity. Instead of saying, oh, I can't go any further, I'm stuck, literally treat it like your job to figure it out. Make a bunch of different models, like try different things. Like, that's when you're able to achieve growth, is when you're hitting your comfort zone, you're hitting the edge, and you're reaching what you consider to be your potential, but then you're getting stuck. I mean, that's an opportunity for growth right there. So don't consider stuck as a negative thing. Consider stuck as an opportunity. I also think
Sorry, go ahead. I was going to say, and a natural part of the creative process.
100%. And I think that people think that you create something and it's just like beautiful and wonderful and that's it. And you see the finished products, but you don't see all of the trial and errors that went into that product or that idea before you see the final. And so you think that it just, you just pulled it out of nowhere, but no, it doesn't
Yep.
work like that. And I think
Artist
that's
magic, but it's also process.
what's that?
Artist magic, but it's also process.
Also process, yes. And I would say like when I was in grad school, the process was what reviewers wanted to see. It wasn't even so much about having the best final product. They wanted to be able to look back and see how you got, what was your thinking, how did you get to where you were? And I think that's a really important value that is a little bit underrated. And I think that we see this when we look back at, great artists and their work. People love to just track their work and see the process by which they arrived at their specific aesthetic. I think that's a really interesting phenomenon. And I think that the reason that exists is because you have imperfections in your work.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, quick question, one of the ones we like to do as we come towards the end. If someone randomly hands you $100, what would you splurge on or invest in? It has to be something that brings you joy and relates to your art or business.
I think what I would invest in is I would go to this person I see for body work and they do really nice facial massages. And I think I would just go book myself an appointment with them.
Honestly, I love that. Sign me up.
Yeah, it's just really great. And it's just very relaxing and just overall just good for my health and mentality.
Yeah, I feel like you probably will have a lot of good aha moments during that session too. You're like, all right, I'm ready to go. Let's get back to the studio.
Right.
Now, Eliza, thank you so much for your time today. It has been so much fun hearing about your story and all the amazing advice you had shared with our listeners. But what exciting projects do you have coming up that our listeners should know about?
So this year I am working on a project that's called the Prison Quilts Reimagined Project. And so what this project is a commemoration of a crocheted prison quilt that was made by inmates at a North Carolina correctional institution for women. And they created each woman has a certain number of squares that represent the number of years that they've been incarcerated on the quilt. And the organization is called Arise Collective, who applied for this grant, and we applied to them as artists to imagine this quilt in a three-dimensional and more permanent form than it is. As it is right now, it's crocheted yarn and it doesn't really have a lot of longevity to it, but we are going to be making it out of mosaic and a folded poetry substrate that is going to receive mosaic to create these panels, which are representative of this prison quilt. And then it's going to be in a shipping container that is going to travel around the state to various locations for people to kind of walk through and experience the quilts reimagined. So we're all really excited about that project. We're also in contract negotiation with that project still, but really looking forward to getting started on the design process. So I would say that's definitely one that the students should know about because I think it's going to be like on blast when it's finally done.
Oh, yes, I'm so excited to hopefully see that in person, but definitely hear about the progress of that. That's amazing. And of course, you do have your acoustic product line in the works, as well as your do-it-yourself paper kit. So you have a lot going on in this upcoming year.
I do have a lot going on. Yeah. I try to narrow it a little bit and just focus on a few things.
Yeah, for sure. Well, for our listeners, if they want to stay in contact with you after today's episode, where can they keep in touch and follow along on these amazing milestones that you're about to hit?
Well, consistent with our conversation on this podcast, my studio newsletter is the best way to keep in touch with
Of
me.
course, of course.
I would encourage all the listeners to go to foldedpoetry.com and go to my contact section or just scroll down to the bottom of the homepage and then sign up for my newsletter there. You can also follow me on Instagram. I will say if you follow me on Instagram, do consider making me a favorite so that you can make sure that you really actually see all my content. Instagram likes to bury it, and Instagram does me dirty like that. So just keep that in mind.
You are not alone.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we will be sure to link all of those things in the show notes. And would you mind staying with us a few extra minutes so we can discuss leveraging your niche and pricing your artwork on a bonus segment for our podcast supporters?
Sure.
Awesome. Well, in the meantime, if you want to stay connected with us in between episodes, share your feedback, or have a question you would like for us to answer on the podcast, you can reach us through social media. I'm at Amay Art across all platforms.
And I'm at J Sanders Studio on all platforms. And if you want to follow the podcast, we're at Level Up Artist on Instagram. You can also visit levelupartist.com to hear the rest of this conversation and become one of our podcast supporters.
Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you.